Game one of the World Series. Grant Napier in Phoenix. Doug Christie back in studio. Doug, you ready for this, man? This is when it gets fun right now.
Oh, man. Are you serious, man? Can you see the smile on my face by the tone of my voice? You can see the smile on my face. Grant, I am so excited. I am so ready. Three games on the ledger tonight, and they should be awesome, man.
It is game one of 82. Of course, the Kings will open up the season in Phoenix tomorrow and then come home on Thursday to take on the San Antonio Spurs. You've got game one of the World Series with Cleveland hosting Chicago. It is that time of year. And, of course, a football game played in Denver last night. So we've got a lot to talk about. And you, if you don't know the numbers, it's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. If you want to text the show, it is 44-1140. Doug and I will be with you right up until 7 o'clock. And Doug, the World Series, this is going to be one of the most I don't want to say the best ratings of all time, but if it goes six or seven games, the fact that the Cubs are playing, not to undermine what the Indians have done and their futility over the decades, but this could very well end up being one of the highest rated World Series in recent memory.
I absolutely agree with you, Grant. Are you joking me? 58 years, 108 years? I mean, it is going to be ratings bonanza, and I don't even think it's going to need to go that long. People are going to want to tune in, yep. Grant, just to see.
Yeah, I think particularly when the games get to Wrigley Field, I think those three games, games three, four, and five, assuming it goes five, and I think it will, I think those games, the ratings will be through the roof, because I think even the casual sports fan, the casual baseball fan will tune in to see the atmosphere at Wrigley Field, because, Doug, based on what we saw over the weekend in the clinching game against the Dodgers, it looked like the Cubs had just won the World Series, and yet that was just the NL championship. So I can't even imagine what the scene's going to be at Wrigley Field.
Grant, and when you say that, listen, I have a little spot of tea. I have a spot of information for you, because
yes.
Listen to this. So remember, the Cub fan, he's at the Giants game. He catches that the home run all by himself out there in a sea of Giants fans. And I said, you know what? Grant sold me. Well, listen to these three stats. There are 108 stitches on the baseball. The Cubs haven't won in 108
wow.
years. Wrigley Field sits on the city plot. Guess what number it is, Grant?
No way.
108.
No way. Wow.
Last but not least, the Cubs win the World Series in Back to the Future 2. And guess how long the movie is?
Oh, my gosh.
108 minutes, Grant. You sold me, man.
Wow.
I'm all in.
Wow. You're killing me, man. You're absolutely killing me. See, that's what you get with Doug Christie, boys and girls. You get information like that. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
That is just, when that fan caught the ball, you sold me. But that right there, that just put me over the top. If I had any money, man, I'm going Cubs, man.
So you're taking the Cubs. How many games are you going?
I'm going to go six.
Okay.
I think it gets interesting. Could be seven, but I'm going to go
right.
six.
If the Cubs do win, I hope they win in five. Because if they do win, they should win at Wrigley Field, based on all the things you just said. And no, really, I mean, how it's going to be great. They could win it on Mars, and it's going to be great. But
right.
Can you imagine the scene at Wrigley Field and around the surrounding area if they were able to win this series in either four or five games?
Well, just like you said, in the NLCS, it looked like they won the World Series when they went into
yep.
bars and different places. They're throwing drinks, and it's just so World Series would take it just to another level.
All right, so call Doug and I. Let us know your pick, how you think this series is going to go. Schwarber in the lineup tonight is a designated hitter, which is unbelievable considering he hasn't played all year and has only had a couple at bats in the Arizona Fall League. I mean, that's just incredible to me. Jason Hayward, you know what? The guy has not produced at all. So he's not playing, Doug. Listen, Joe Maddon said, I've waited. This is not the time of the year I can wait for someone to start hitting the baseball.
Yeah, he's been my X factor, man, but I agree with him. You know, sometimes you got to pull him out. But you know what? This might be that spark, and then he gets in there at just that, time when they need something. But to your point, Schwarber, man, first 10 games of the season, didn't play all year, and he starts in the World Series.
Can you imagine if last year on this day, opening night in the NBA, all right,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know for sure if it was also the opening of the World Series, but it was in the same week. Can you imagine if 1 year ago I said, folks, I got my little crystal ball out, and 12 months from today, the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be at home getting their world championship rings from Adam Silver, and the Indians, 5 feet away in the building that almost touches the queue, are going to be playing game one of the World Series hosting the Chicago Cubs.
That's what you would have heard right there, Grant. I mean, that just sounds – it sounds crazy. And you could have said it when it was 3-1 and they were down. Yep. Cleveland was down and people would have laughed you out of the town. But, man, it is actually happening, and, man, it's going to be awesome.
All right, there's a very interesting game tonight. And I understand it's just the first game of the year, and so I don't want to blow it out of proportion. But I think a team, and I'm switching gears and going to the NBA, I think the Jazz are a team to keep your eyes on. And, Doug, they open up against Portland. And, you know, I think Portland's good, and we saw what they did last year despite losing four starters. You know, they played very well because they have a dynamic backcourt with, obviously, Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum. But I like the Jazz. I like what they did in the offseason. This is a very early, interesting test just to see, you know, what the Jazz bring on the road up in Portland.
I totally agree with you. First of all, the Portland Trailblazers are like the mini Golden State Warriors. They got a crazy backcourt. But when you talk about the Utah Jazz, I think – two big-time additions, Boris Diaw being one. He brings just the knowledge, the winning attitude. And then Joe Johnson, that's someone that you can go to down if you need a shot or something like that. But George Hill as well, incredible additions. Quinn Snyder has put together a really nice bunch. You get Dante Exum back. Derek Favors is a stud. And Trey Lyles, with all those Kentucky guys, he fell under the radar, but this kid can play.
All right, coming up on the show today, our favorite guest, Charles Davis, NFL on Fox at 4 o'clock. At 5:05, Matt Barnes. Doug, we're going to be talking with Matt Barnes each and every week. The Matt Barnes Show will debut today at 5:05. The Kings are currently on the airplane getting ready to take off to come to Phoenix. Steve Kyler, NBA Insiders for Basketball Insiders, will be with us. We'll talk to him about the Warriors and the Spurs. We got all of that. Again, plus your phone calls at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. All right, let's talk about the Kings, Doug, with the game tomorrow here in Phoenix. Game one, I would assume that the starting lineup will be Ty Lawson, Aaron Aflalo, Rudy Gay, Kostas Koufos, and DeMarcus Cousins, only based on what I've seen during the preseason. Now, I want to ask you, with the backcourt of Phoenix, which is their bread and butter, and the fact that they don't go big a lot. In other words, when you think of the Suns, you think of the new era of NBA where it's more of a backcourt game. They clearly have no one that can contend with DeMarcus Cousins. But I'm wondering how a guy like Kostas Koufos fits into this matchup against Phoenix.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because I don't know who they're going to start at the power forward. Marquese Chris, are they going to start Dragan Bender? Are they going to go small? So, Kostas Koufos, and this is one of those games, Grant, where you wouldn't really have to worry about DeMarcus getting in foul trouble because he's going to be sneaking Tyson Chandler. So unless he's just fouling him on dunks, he's not going to get in foul trouble. So good point, because I don't really know how he fits in there. Both of those guys are similar. They're not going to give you much offensively. They're going to play some defense and get some rebounds. So, it'll be interesting. This is that game that you were kind of talking about that maybe Matt comes in, you go small. So we'll see.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, to me, I could see a starting lineup with Matt Barnes, with Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins. And you know, with this lineup on the floor for Phoenix, I mean, I would, you know, Matt Barnes, and we'll talk to him about this. He said, hey, I'm fine with playing some four. I'm okay. You know, that's the way the league is going. But with this lineup that the Suns are going to put out or what they could potentially put out, I mean, to me, if you're looking at this, you know, okay, what would be the best lineup against this team? DeMarcus, Rudy, Barnes, with Aaron Aflalo and Ty Lawson, that, you know, we might see that combination on the floor quite a bit. And speaking of the Kings, I want to let everyone know that on Friday we'll be debuting the Dave Yeager Show. He'll be on with us each and every week. So we got Matt Barnes, we've got Dave Yeager. We've got the Kings covered better than anyone else in town. All right, we are going to have it covered like no one else anywhere, and it's going to be each and every afternoon. And Doug, I think, you know, again, we talk about this. It's one of 82. I know it's October. I don't want to get carried away. I'm just looking at the Kings with 11 games, Doug, in 17 nights to begin the season, 6 of 8 on the road to begin the season, and no Darren Collison for 8 games. I just think I'm looking at these first 11 games, and if the Kings can just stay afloat, Doug, don't get killed, don't get buried, you know, I think that they will have weathered a big-time storm.
I totally agree with you. From a couple standpoints, Grant, number one is just weathering the storm and trying to get some W's in on the left side of the ledger. Number two, though, is staying true and staying to what coach wants the team to do and wants them to play with. Like, defensively, focus on that, but the movement of the ball, the movement of bodies, because losing can all of a sudden start to making the ball stick and different things. So I agree with you. It is big time they get out of the gate fast.
All right. Tomorrow, game one, and then, of course, a quick turnaround for Sacramento with a back-to-back against the San Antonio Spurs. What are you expecting from the Warriors-Spurs game tonight, Doug?
Well, I'm hoping that it's a close game that lasts a long time, so the San Antonio Spurs are tired when they get here. But I really think that just like a lot of teams, you're not going to be able to hang with them. I think the Spurs probably hang around for 2.5, 3 quarters, or maybe 2 quarters, and then all of a sudden Golden State starts to pull away. If there is a time, though, Grant, to shock them, it would probably be this first game. The only problem is you're looking at a different San Antonio Spurs team. Now, if this was the one with Tim Duncan last year and these guys were totally into playing with each other, now they've got Pau Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, some different things. So it's going to be interesting. I think Golden State pulls away after about 2.5.
So are you saying you think the Spurs are better this year, or do you think they're not as good because they won 68 games during the regular season?
I think taking Tim Duncan off your team, just even if he's not even playing, makes you worse.
Okay. So you think just not having him around, period, even though as the season went on, he was less and less productive, you just think without his presence, that cost them maybe 5 games, 8 games or so?
That sounds about right. Pau Gasol, I think, is going to have a resurgence.
Yep.
For whatever he is, he's going to have a really good run, in my opinion, with the passing and cutting and all that stuff. But just looking at what they got, I do like David Lee, because with the smaller play, he's a guy who's very, if he can fit in with what Pop wants, his addition could be beneficial.
Yeah, you know, of course, Kawhi Leonard is such a good all-around player defensively. That's the one thing we will see on Thursday night, Doug, regardless of what happens tonight in Golden State. The one thing that Dave Yeager knows, and this is no mystery, and I'm not, you know, revealing anything that everyone doesn't know, the Kings are going to have to work for their baskets on Thursday. I mean, the Spurs, they guard you with handcuffs on.
Yes, and that is why, to our point, Grant, they must play the right way. If you ISO ball against the Spurs, they are just too good to lock in on defense, close down driving lanes, close down passing lanes, and you'll jack up a shot that's probably, instead of a 50% shot, it goes down to 25, something like that, with the hand in your face, you're blocked out, you're not going to get the rebound, and they're running on you. That is just not good. You're going to have to play good, solid basketball, and you're going to have to do it for 48 minutes.
All right, so we talk about the Kings. We've talked about, you know, them opening tomorrow. Now, here are some of the question marks that I have with Sacramento, and right off the get-go is their depth at point guard for the first 8 games, all right? I mean, Ty Lawson talked about how, you know, he's trying to get in shape to play 30 to 40 minutes in the first 8 games. Will Garrett Temple then slide over and back him up? Will they have someone else hand the ball? That's number one. Number two, what is the front court rotation going to look like? Who's going to be the guy left out? Is it going to be Omri Caspi? Because Matt Barnes is going to be the first guy off the bench, you know, at that particular position. You know, will Ben McLemore be left out? Is he going to be playing right off the get-go because of the depth now at shooting guard? Those are a couple of the question marks. And I talked about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. Can DeMarcus Cousins play at least 75 games?
Yep.
And here's something else on my wish list for DeMarcus. He needs to cut down on the turnovers, Doug. I think that number's got to come down. Now, I know he's got the ball in his hands a lot, and when you have the ball a lot, you're going to commit more turnovers than you know, a typical center who doesn't have the ball as much. But I want to see that number drop a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. Turnovers, at least 75 games, and fouls, Grant. That's another one.
Those
early fouls that get him on the bench for no apparent reason, arguing with the refs, those little things like that, that's the growth to lead the team. But to your first point about how the minutes are going to be distributed, he might do something, meaning Yeager, that's interesting. He may go smaller, bigger ball, meaning that you might see a lineup of Aflalo, Garrett, Omri Caspi, when Cousin goes out, Gay, and and Matt Barnes, for instance,
right.
and just have that 6-7. So guys will probably get some minutes that when Darren comes back, that's going to be the interesting part.
All right. Other news today in the world of sports. The Giants have released Josh Brown. We can talk about that. Arian Foster retires. Boy, how bad did Brock Osweiler and the Houston Texans look last night? This is a all-too-familiar tone for them when they're on the road. You saw what happened earlier in the year when they went in New England, you know, without Brady and without Garoppolo and got absolutely embarrassed, okay, on a Thursday night. They looked like they had never played together. Another embarrassing performance last night by the Houston Texans.
Yeah, it's tough. Bill O'Brien, you know, they spent a lot of money on Osweiler. My question to you is, Grant, what do you think of him? Because when I look at him, he's a big guy. He can make some passes, and then all of a sudden he'll just do something really stupid. Is he going to develop into anything? What do you think?
I don't think his quantity of work, in other words, I don't think we've seen him start enough games to fully judge him. But I'll tell you what looks bad for him. Okay, it looks bad for him when a guy like Carson Wentz comes in and who's never played before
yep.
and should have been a third-string quarterback and plays as well as he has. It looks bad when a guy taken in the fourth round of the draft this year, Dak Prescott, comes in and plays as well as he has. It looks bad when a guy like Trevor Siemian has played as well as he has when he's been on the field. That's what would concern me because Brock Osweiler is not a rookie. He's not a guy that's been in the league for 2 years. You know, he should be better at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. When I watch him and I'm just saying, like, man, he's a big guy. He's athletic. He played basketball. I watch him run. I just the package is there, and I think that's probably what made Denver so excited about him. And then all of a sudden, Texans going, you know what? We need a quarterback. There's one right there, and $70+ million. But something's missing, man. When I watch him play.
All right. Today, the Giants released Josh Brown. The owner of the New York Giants, John Mara, said, quote, "We believe we did the right thing in every juncture in our relationship with Josh. Our beliefs, our judgments, our decisions were misguided. We accept that responsibility." What was very interesting is that Brown released a statement today, which, you know, to me, goes against what was reported last week. And I don't get it. You know, I don't get some of the things that he said today in which he said that, you know, he never struck his wife before. And again, I wasn't there. You weren't there. But I don't know what to read on this. I really don't. This to me is a guy that should. And I said this before the Giants left him home. And I said this before the NFL put him on that list before Thursday. I said this last week, okay? A guy like that shouldn't be playing professional sports, period. Whether he actually, you know, struck his wife, did not. I wasn't there. You weren't there. But what he did was heinous. It was disgusting. He should have never been allowed to play in the NFL in the first place. That's the part that I think bothers a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with you, Grant. And, you know, listening to Mr. Mara's comments, he said actions and they were misguided. So what that says to me is that Josh went in there and said something to him that now as this continues to go and get out, it probably painted itself in a better light than actuality.
Yep.
So it's a tough one all the way around, but as the Giants go, you draw the line in the sand and you move on. The NFL has to do the same thing because at some point you're going to have to start setting precedents.
Yeah, I mean, he said it's important to share that I never struck my wife.
That totally goes against everything that he said. He said it out of his own mouth.
I don't know, man. I you know what? Again, it's just like time to go away and, you know, and not forget about the victims. I think all too often, mm-hmm. you know, we want to, you know, take the you know, domestic violence goes both ways. It's just not men against women. It can be women against men, and I think we need to make that distinction, and I want to try to keep this to, you know, the world of sports. But since we're talking about this, you know, it's like people, they want to, you know, they want to destroy Roger Goodell. They want to come down on John Mara. You know, they want Josh Brown to be brought out into the town square and lined up against the wall and shot, which, you know, I don't understand that mentality. And I'm being somewhat exaggerating here, okay? But they, you know, no one ever talks about the victim in this case. Nobody ever asks, well, gee, I wonder how she's doing. She's got children. Boy, I wonder if she's scarred for life. Gee, you know what? I wonder if she's able to live a productive life, being married to a well-known athlete, somebody that makes their living at professional sports. You know, I don't ever hear, you know, people wondering how she's doing. And it's just, again, I just think, you know, there are so many times in our culture where we're looking sometimes in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I totally agree. When you hear something that he abused her, however it was,
it was awful.
She was 4 months pregnant,
awful.
We should definitely be asking, how is she? How is the kids? Is everything okay? Especially when the NFL has to come to the Pro Bowl and remove her from the hotel room and put her someplace else. That's tough.
Again, I'll wrap this up by saying I have taken measures to get help so that I may be the voice of change, not a statistic. It is important to share that I never struck my wife and never would. Abuse takes many forms and is not a gray area. Through the past several years, I have worked to identify and rectify my own behaviors. The road to rehabilitation is a journey and a constant modification of a way of life. My journey will continue forever as a person determined to leave a positive legacy, and I embrace the opportunities to show and speak about what has helped me to be that man. So, hey, you know what? Again, I go back, and you and I talked about this the other day with Ray Rice. I commend Ray Rice for the way he has handled himself since the video released of him striking his then fiance, and since their marriage and everything that they do in the arena of domestic violence. I applaud him for that. I think it's great. I think it's a disgrace that he has been basically blackballed by the NFL. I don't know Josh Brown. I've never met Josh Brown. I wouldn't know Josh Brown if he walked into the room and sat down in front of me, all right? The point I'm trying to make is if what he says is true, okay, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm just saying if it's true and this is the way he is going about living his life now, then you know what? Good for him. It's just like we don't throw away drug addicts. We don't throw away alcoholics. We don't throw, you know, if those people can rehabilitate themselves and live productive lives, you know what? We should go up and pat them on the back. I'm not ready to pat Josh Brown on the back yet, but what I am saying is if this is the way he is now living his life, then good for him.
Well, you know, with the NFL needing so much change, Grant, one thing that I can say that you just spoke to is Ray White, Rice and his wife. They should be the example because they are a lightning rod for change. Not only did they get married, but they continue to go out and speak and try to attempt to change that whole environment. So you applaud them for trying to do that. And that's what I think that the NFL needs to embrace going forward.
All right. We will come right back. We'll take your phone calls if you want to talk about this subject, the World Series, the start of the NBA season, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie on Sports 1140 KHTK. Full show for you. Hope you are having a good one. We take your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Doug, you know, back to the NBA for a moment. You know, every year there's a team that comes from nowhere that we don't really expect to be good. And there's normally a team every year that we think is going to be very good that's not. And I think last year that team was the Houston Rockets. You know, they were coming off a Western Conference championship a battle with Golden State. They lost after beating the Clippers in that thrilling semifinal Western Conference series. And they were terrible last year. They were absolutely awful. I'm wondering, when you look at the Western Conference, is there a team right now that a lot of people think is not yet a playoff team, that when April comes, they're going to be very much in a hunt? Is there any team in the West that you've got your eye on?
Well, we've already talked about the Utah Jazz, and that's definitely one. But the other one I definitely think is the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think that they're a team that you're not sure, you know, really good pieces, you know, Zach LaVine, all the guys, but can they take that next step? And I really think that they can. This is a team that they're young. They're going to play very aggressive. We watched them play quite a few times last year, Grant, and every time they played their hearts out. I mean, they play hard. And that in and of itself, you are going to get some growth. So I definitely think that that the T-Wolves might squeak in there.
It will be very interesting to see how Chris Dunn comes along. You know, Tom Thibodeau said, you know, he's probably not going to start for – quite a while, or, you know, a quarter of the season or so. And again, we'll wait and see if that changes. But, you know, they spent the fifth overall pick on him. They liked what they saw in summer league, which is kind of hard to get a gauge on. But he's not yet a starter, as to the best of my knowledge. He's not starting. We'll look at him on Saturday when Minnesota comes into the Golden One Center. But Karl Anthony Towns is an all-star who's got superstar written all over him. Wiggins, you know, is now a seasoned vet, even though he's still young. He's got that much experience under him. You know, we saw what Zach LaVine did. My question is, as Ricky Rubio, as the starting point guard, you know, is he the guy, and there's been a lot of trade rumors involving Rubio, but is he a guy that's capable of taking a team to a 45-win season? And I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
I actually, that team, I think that if he could have, coming off the pick and roll in that elbow jump shot, if he could knock that down, Grant, I would say yes. And then if he could just get a spot-up three-pointer. And that is only from the offensive end. The reason I say that is because they have your Zach LaVines, your Wiggins, your Karl Anthony Towns. These guys are offensive players, so you don't need a lot of offense from him. And he can pass just as good as anyone in the NBA. He sees the floor probably better than 90% of the guys in the NBA. So he's kind of that perfect type of player, which a rookie like Chris Dunn would be as well. Bigger, better defense, those type of things. So I think that he could lead them, but he's going to need just that little bit of offense.
It's 3:35, time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sport Clips near you. All right, so you and I have gone over the teams that we think, you know, are going to be good. Let's look at a team that right now is projected to be a playoff team that when we get to April may not. And that team that I'm looking at is Dallas. I'm not so sure. You know, Dirk Nowitzki is at the end of the road. We get that. They're very aggressive in the offseason. We know that they went out and got, you know, two of the Golden State Warriors and paid a ton of money. But that's a team that I'm not sold on, Doug. I'm not ready to pencil them in just yet as one of the top eight.
No, I agree with you. They are only going to go as far as Dirk Nowitzki goes. I mean, you know, you got Deron Williams. Quincy Acey went there, but Harrison Barnes, $90 million, and he's averaging like 6 points in the preseason. Bogut, you know what you get with Bogut. Bogut, I thought played well in Golden State because of the people that were around him that really helped his skill set. He can pass, and he's a little chippy and those type of things. Seth Curry goes there as well, but I don't see it. I think you're only going to go far as Dirk is going to take you, and like you said, he's coming towards the end.
All right, if we look at the West and we automatically assume, and again, we're doing this without knowing about any injuries, mm-hmm. Golden State's in, San Antonio's in, Oklahoma City's in, the L.A. Clippers are to me, you know, a 55-win team. To me, they're a playoff team. Memphis, to me, is a playoff team. Houston this year is definitely a playoff team, and Portland's a playoff team, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. Those are seven that I've got. All right, so assuming that, and again, I'm not going in any order, obviously, assuming that Golden State, and tell me if you disagree with any of this. Tell me if you look at Golden State, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the L.A. Clippers, Memphis, Houston, and Portland. If they're in, okay, that's seven teams. All right, that means everyone else is fighting for that spot. Any of those teams that I just named that you think's not a playoff team?
Memphis, they're the only ones that I'm not sure. I'm going to have to see them to say. So let's just take them out.
All right,
and
let's
call
take them
six.
Out. Call it six. Okay. All right. So that means that the Utahs of the world, mm-hmm. okay, and I'm going to put Memphis in there. You look at, you know, Minnesota, who you were just talking about. Look at all the teams that are left that are pretty good, that are going to be and Dallas. And think about the teams that are going to be fighting for those final two playoff spots if you and I agree on the six.
Hey, man, I will tell you, those are going to be some hellacious games. That's what the Kings have to look forward to is you're going to be fighting against Dallas, Memphis, the Utah Jazz, and the Minnesota Timberwolves. So those other teams that are going to be in the playoffs, when you play them, you want to beat them. If you don't, those other ones, that just names, Minnesota, Utah, Grizzlies, and the Mavericks, those are the teams that you're going to have to beat to get into where you want to go.
That's a good point. Dave, you're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie.
Hey, guys. I know people don't like to talk about the front office of sports teams too often, but my question is, if the Cubs pull this off and win the World Series, do you think that Theo Epstein will be considered the greatest sports team executive of all time?
I don't know if of all time, but he'll be in the conversation when you take two teams such as Boston and Chicago with the decades of futility and turn them into championship teams. He will be in the conversation. I don't know if I'd say greatest of all time, but he'll definitely be in the conversation.
Okay, that's all I got. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. I mean, if the Cubs were able to do this, then what he has accomplished, doing it not only once but twice, would be the impossible, the unthinkable, and to have the same man, you know, be in charge, that says it all.
Yeah, I mean, you think about your Jerry West and you got your Pat Riley's, and that's just in basketball, but you can go football in a whole bunch of different ways. But
Red Auerbach.
Red Auerbach. When you think of Theo Epstein and you think of the Boston, they were losing for a long time. You had to change culture. The same thing that he's facing now in Chicago, losing, changing culture, and he is the key to that. When you have the conversation, to your point, Grant, his name has to pop up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Grant Napier and Doug Christie, don't forget that coming up at 4 o'clock, Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Boy, did he have a heck of a game to do on Sunday as he was in Detroit with that thriller where the Lions came back and won that game. If you want to talk NFL, we'll do that. The World Series, who do you like? Game one tonight with John Lester. Again, he's so darn steady. The guy is just, you saw how good he was against the Dodgers. You saw how good he was against the Giants. I mean, Brian, if you're the Cubs and you're on the road and you're throwing out a John Lester, you got to feel pretty darn confident.
Hey, I will tell you, first of all, left-handed, so he's coming off there hot. Three starts, 2-0, ERA of 0.86, and with runners in scoring position, Grant, he takes it even lower, 0.76.
Wow.
And that's in 21 innings. This guy is lights out. Yes, with that type of a defense behind you as well, Grant, you got to be feeling good.
And keep in mind that the DH is in play in games 1, 2, 6, and 7, and not in play in games 3, 4, and 5. And the reason why that is important is the way Terry Francona uses Andrew Miller, who's been the best pitcher of anybody in this postseason, and there's not even a close second, in my opinion. And, Terry Francona may not be able to use Andrew Miller in Wrigley the way he does and the way he has throughout the second half of the season and in the playoffs. You'll see a ton of double switching going on at Wrigley from the Indians' perspective, but it'll be very interesting to see how Terry Francona manages this series when it gets to Wrigley as it relates to Andrew Miller. You know what's crazy? And I think you and I talked about this, that both Andrew Miller, okay, and Aroldis Chapman were the eighth and ninth inning pitchers for the Yankees until the trade deadline. I mean, think about that, right? And yet, they got a lot of prospects, but that's to think that those two were on the same team is mind-boggling.
I'm surprised you didn't go on a Grant's rant right there.
No,
man.
You know what? I was in favor of it.
Oh, really?
Okay. Absolutely. Listen, to me, that where the Yankees are is the equivalent of a 38-win team in baseball.
Uh-huh.
You know,
okay.
You you don't stink, but you're not good enough to do anything.
Right.
And, to me, there's nothing worse in the NBA than being between 35 and 40 wins. You're in no man's land. You're not good enough to make the playoffs, and you're not bad enough to get a good draft pick. Right. That is the worst area to be in the NBA. The same with the Yankees. They had too many guys that had too much value. They needed to rebuild. So, no, I applauded them. I thought they did a great job.
Well, I will tell you this, that Aroldis Chapman is a stud, but Andrew Miller,
take him any day of the week over Chapman.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, give me Andrew Miller over Aroldis Chapman any day of the week. No, I wouldn't even think twice about it.
Not at all, Grant. It is 3:42, time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to Help a Hero program at a Sports Clips near you.
All right, we'll come right back. This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie. All right, Doug, so this is the issue that I think a lot of fans have with the NBA right now because of the super teams. All right, you've got 30 teams in the NBA, but realistically, in your opinion, how many of the 30 have a legitimate chance to be standing in June holding the Larry O'Brien Trophy?
Well, a couple key words there, Grant. Realistically, okay, so I'll say I got three levels here. First level is the true ones. That is Golden State and Cleveland. I mean, that's pretty much what it's coming down to.
Yep.
Then you got lightning in the bottle, and I'm going to go with Boston, the Clippers, and San Antonio. If something happens to one of those two teams, those guys might be able to get in. And then the last group is Portland and Toronto. Those are that's it. But realistically, I'm just looking at Golden State and Cleveland. I don't see anybody with the ability in a seven game series to beat those guys.
All right, Grant. If I told you right now that one of those two teams would not be in the NBA Finals, either Golden State or Cleveland, which of the two would you say will not be in it?
I would say Cleveland, because they depend so much on LeBron James. Let's just say something happens, he hurts his back or something.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at as if there were no injuries.
Oh, if there's no injuries? Let me see, Western Conference, Eastern Conference. I would say Golden State. The reason is because I think it's a little deeper out here in the West. The Eastern Conference is going to be a cakewalk for
And don't you think Golden State has an incredible target on their back right now, because outside of the Bay Area, everyone's hoping that they lose?
Yes, I totally agree with you. So if you thought that winning 73 was stressful, I can just speak for when we won 61 and we pretty much were champions. Yep. Every arena, Grant, you know, that we went into, it was rocking like Game 7. So that's what they're going to experience, and that takes a lot of energy out of you. So it is. I agree with you. They got target on them.
All right, and I'll tell you, based on what I saw when the Kings played the Warriors this year in the preseason down at San Jose, if you had not known, all right, if you had just walked in and someone gave you tickets and you don't know what month it was, you would have sworn that you were there for a playoff game, and that was a preseason game. So I'm with you. I mean, and again, I understand that's the Bay Area, but, you know, and this is the way it was when you played with the Kings, you know, when Vladdy and Webb and everyone, when it was like the Rolling Stones pulled up to the arena. I mean, you guys were a rock band coming into the building. Remember? I mean, it was unbelievable. It didn't matter where we were. It was like, you know, every single arena in the league was sold out to see you guys play.
Yeah, and that it takes something out of you, because those fans give something to their team that you're going to get their best punch. So, and you know, Grant, every NBA team can win a game. They can. If a guys get hot or whatever it is. So let's say that on that particular night, that guy he's marginal, he's hot tonight. And all of a sudden, you got a game on your hand. You do that for 82 games, you are going to be spent.
I got to tell you, I would have loved to be sitting near you if a coach had come up to you and said, you know what, Doug, listen, I'm going to sit you down tonight. Why, coach? I'm going to rest you.
Good luck. Good freaking
luck. No, really.
I can't.
No.
Grant, you want to play. You want to be out there. There's something about the rhythm and the different things. I love playing, man. I wish I could play right now.
All right, so we got three games tonight. We got the World Series tonight. We got the Kings tomorrow, the first of a back-to-back. And, Doug, again, I talk about the Kings 11 games and 17 nights. I mean, what a way to start off the season, including six of your first eight on the road. The first date without your point guard. Again, you know, you're looking at 11 games in 17 days. You know, I'm thinking if you're Sacramento, and again, worst case scenario, figure out a way to win at least four of those games. Don't kill yourself early. You know, do not kill yourself early.
Yeah, because it's going to be, especially in the Western Conference, people are going to eat each other up. So just don't get so down. So like 1-10, that would just be awful. If you could get 4-7, 5-6, or obviously if you get a winning record, that's fantastic. But if you are going to be on the losing side, get a few in your pocket, feeling good, playing better. As soon as Darren comes back, take it from there.
Yeah, you know, you look at the first eight games without Darren Collison. Phoenix is a non-playoff team, I believe. Minnesota is on the borderline. Atlanta's clearly a playoff team. Mm-hmm. Miami is on the fence. Orlando, to me, is not a playoff team. Milwaukee, to me, is not. And then Toronto is. So, you know, it's not like you're playing the powers of the NBA here in the eight games that you'll be without your starting point guard. Obviously, San Antonio is a power. Atlanta is good, but they're not a power. Toronto, to me, is an upper echelon team. But other than that, you know, I don't see a big difference between those other teams and Sacramento, even without Darren Collison.
Yeah, and these are the games, Grant. At the beginning of the season, this is when you sneak up on people and you catch them. A team like Phoenix, if you get them down early, not that they'll quit, but what happens to those type of teams is you can beat them. The same with Minnesota. They're a young team. You get them down early, you can beat them. You don't know what's going to happen with Dwight Howard and the Hawks. The same thing with Miami, Orlando. You get them down early, so you got to come out of the gate fighting hard, playing hard, and some of these teams you'll get a win just off doing that.
And again, I don't know if you followed my instructions, Mr. Christie, and went on StubHub to look at the prices here in Phoenix for the home opener tomorrow, the first game of the year for the Phoenix Suns. You can get tickets for as low as 8 $60. And if you want to sit downstairs, no problem. $60. There's no interest at all in this city right now for the Phoenix Suns. None.
Man, it happens to be raining in Sacramento. You know, Dougie, I, the wife, we everywhere. We could have been sitting courtside. Grant done a show from courtside.
It's raining. It's only 90 here.
Oh, man.
It's only 90 here. 90 and, you know, typical Phoenix desert weather, 90 degrees.
Stay off the links, man.
Oh, no, I can't. No, it's, are you kidding me? It's a business trip, dude. I mean, you think I'm playing golf with the first game of the year? Come on, stop it. I'm going to be ready to go, man. I'm not be playing golf.
I can hear it in your voice, man. I know you're ready.
No, I'm ready to roll. All right, speaking of a guy that's always ready, that's Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. That's next here on Sports 1140 KHTK.